Of a little group of unknown members. The Honorable Fabian Roman Pekarovic. I will be faithful on their true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to will. So help me God. The Honorable Joseph John Garcia.
I, Joseph John Garcia, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law. So help me God.
The Honorable John Emmanuel Cortez.
I, John Emmanuel Cortez, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law. So help me God.
The Honorable Albert Joseph Isola.
I, Albert Joseph Isola, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law, so help me God.
The Honorable Joseph John Bassani.
I, Joseph John Bassani, do solemnly affirm that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law.
The Honorable Gilbert Harris Ifudi.
I,
I, Joseph of Arimathea, do solemnly affirm that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the heir of the successor to the Holy Family.
Honourable Paul John Bazan.
I, Paul John Bazan, do swear that I will faithfully and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heir and successor according to law, so help me God.
Honourable Stephen Thomas Inari.
I, Stephen Ernest Inari, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, for every successor according to law, so help me God.
The Honourable Samantha J. Sacramento.
I, Samantha Jane Sacramento, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, for all the successors according to law. So help me God.
The Honourable Vijay Dayanani.
I, Vijay Dayanani, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the heir and successor according to law. So help me God.
The Honourable Keith Asapowdy.
I, Keith Asapowdy, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the heir and successor, according to law, so help me God.
the other, my way, do not accept a sound mind. The Honorable Damon James Bethune.
I, Damon James Bethune, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty of the Elizabeth II, the heirs and successors, according to law, so help me God.
The Honourable Daniel Andrew Stephen.
I, Daniel Andrew Stephen, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law, so help me God.
The Honourable Roy Mark Kenton.
I, Roy Mark Kenton, do swear I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
The Honourable Elliot Dan Phillips.
I, Elliot Dan Phillips, can swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law. So help me God.
The Honourable Edwin Joseph Hurley.
I, Edwin Joseph Hurley, is aware that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the heirs and successors according to law, so help me God.
Now, the appointment of the Speaker of the Parliament, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Presiding Officer, I have the honour to move that Mr. Melvin Farrell, BEM, GMD, RDJP, be appointed Speaker of the Divorce College. Mr. Presiding Officer, before I start my address on the appointment of the Speaker, I want to quickly make a short observation of the characteristics that bring you to the chair this morning. It is a pleasure to have the opportunity to address you in your capacity as Father of the House. That is a capacity you hold here in this chamber, whichever one of the two definitions of that sort of parentage we might decide to adopt. You see, in some legislative chambers, the term Father of the House was applied to the longest serving member of the Parliament. In other chambers in the Commonwealth, it is applied to the oldest member of the Parliament in age. But you qualify by either measure. Something of which we, at least on this side of the House, are extraordinarily proud. Indeed, in the time since we last hit the chair in this place, at the last ceremonial opening of this Parliament, Her Majesty the Queen has rightly seen fit to appoint you a Knight Commander of the Order of St. Michael and St. George. You are therefore now taking the chair not just in your capacity as the Father of the House, but also as the only Knight of the Realm sitting in this place. And Mr. Presiding Officer, it is remarkable to note that if this Parliament runs its 4-year course, you will have served as a member of it for over 50 years. That is a frankly truly remarkable contribution to the political and public life of our nation, and one for which you must be congratulated, no doubt, by all members. A most extraordinary contribution to the public life of the nation. You will have served for half a century. And of those 50 years to date, at least, you have enjoyed 16 years in ministerial office, 8 of them as Chief Minister. And you will have served 20 years as a leader of the opposition. Mr. Presiding Officer, you are undoubtedly a national treasure, although I have no doubt that you would much rather be a national treasure. Well, Mr. Presiding Officer, in order to spare your blessings any further and the retribution that I will get later for having delivered that part of your speech, I will move on now to the substantive motion that we are considering for the appointment of a new Speaker this morning. I want to start my address in this respect by highlighting the excellent work undertaken by the Honourable Adolfo Ganova in the time that he has held the office of Speaker. Mr. Ganova held the office of Speaker between 2012 and this year, 2019. The role of Speaker was, in fact, the last of what one might call the great offices of state in Gibraltar, which he had not held. He had been a minister from 1972, the first full-time minister. He had been mayor twice. He had been Chief Minister, he had been Leader of the Opposition, and perhaps most remarkably, he had also been Acting Governor of Gibraltar on more than one occasion. Speaker was really all that was left. And in keeping with his strong principles as a family man, first and foremost, I've also kind of turned down the role when it was first offered to him because of family illness at the time. And when the time came for Adolfo to be Speaker, upon a second invitation, he wished to make the role very much his own. I want to express my gratitude on behalf, no doubt, of all honourable members of the House for the work done by Mr. Ganova in this people's chair. The few times that I might not have agreed entirely with his ruling, I've always felt sufficient respect for Speaker Ganova's views that I knew it was right to defer to his judgment on the rules. Mr. Presiding Officer, in order to reflect the enormous contribution to the public and political life of Gibraltar by Mr. Ganova, culminating in his magnificent service in the office of Speaker, the government will move a motion in the early new year for a resolution that the House should bestow the freedom of the city on Mr. Ganova. I will already discuss this matter with the Leader of the Opposition, who has agreed to support the government motion. I expect that we will be able to hold the ceremony and bestowment of the freedom at a later date in the spring next year in Nazareth Square. Mr. Ganova leaves a big gap to fill. I can think of no one better to fill that gap but a former and very highly regarded clerk of the House, Melvin Farrell. Melvin was clerk from 2006 to 2014. He was therefore the first crux of the problem. His time ushered in the new procedures applicable under the then new constitution of 2006 that restyled the House as the Gibraltar Parliament. And if there is one word to define his attitude to members in the time that he was first, it would, in my view, be generous. I say that as someone who had the pleasure of enjoying Melvin's advice, both as a member of the opposition, then as a leader of the opposition, and then as leader of the House and Chief Minister. He was always, as Clark, generous and kind in his approach to all members, and to this member, whichever rank I might have held in the House. He was always quite approachable and positive in his views. He was always keen to assist members to ensure that whatever side of the House or whatever side of the argument one was on, you were able to present your views in the most appropriate manner. That generous, kindly, and approachable manner was laced with elegance in his own presentation of the work of the House. Much like his predecessor, and as I may say so, his successor, he made the work of the clerk flow flawlessly as he ushered the proceedings of the House onward, despite members' either lack of familiarity with rules or, on some occasions, members' attempts to get in the way of the established rules. And of course, Mr. Farrell is also well known for being impeccably polite, impartial, and unflappable in any situation. He will be a great ambassador for Gibraltar, also at Commonwealth Parliamentary Association functions, especially he knows well from the time as clerk when he was Secretary of the Gibraltar Branch. Mr. Presiding Member, your own predecessor as Chief Minister, you yourself, your successor as Chief Minister, and I as the current incumbent of the post, have all had the benefit of working with Melvin whilst he was in the civil service. All of us have had cause to be impressed by his diligence and his ability in equal measure. It was no surprise, therefore, that when Melvin came to retire as clerk, he was solicit fulsome praise and recognition from both sides of the House for his work in Parliament and his earlier work in the civil service. The Farrell loyally served the House and he has loyally served Gibraltar as a civil servant before he arrived in the House of Clerk. Now he returns with what I believe will be support from both sides of the House to serve the Parliament and his beloved Gibraltar again, this time from the umpire's viewpoint. As the only civil servant in post at the time of our original election, wily enough to have kept his wet pension while all others were trading their hymn, no doubt acting in keeping with your advice at the time in this respect, we drag him out of retirement to once again be pressed into the service of our nation. No doubt now the work of the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform will benefit from Mr. Farrell's great experience as clerk. He was clerk also at the time of the preparation of the report on reform chaired by Mr. Canavan. The Select Committee on Reform has a lot of work to do, and we are committed to it, and we will be convening it soon, and there will be an early meeting of that committee. Democracy is changing, like everything else in our community is changing. We need to modernise and we need to adapt. And in that work, Mr. Farrell's experience will no doubt be an enormously useful guide to all members. Mr. Presiding Member, when Mr. Farrell retired from this place, I was sure he would be recognised for the excellent service he has rendered to this community. He was, with the bestowment upon him by Her Majesty of the British Empire Medal. Indeed, this Parliament also recognised his service and granted him the Gibraltar Medallion of Distinction. I also predicted then that I was sure that Melvin's service to the community was not over. Indeed, he went on to become a Justice of the Peace. And I'm delighted to see that today, with the support of the House, he's set another period of service in a role I'm confident he will be able to discharge with his usual tact and good humour and his distinctive diligence, elegance, and breadth. Mr. Presiding Officer, I commend the motion for that.
The Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Presiding Member, we are delighted to support the nation appointing Melvin Farrell as the new Speaker of Parliament. Melvin Farrell has been a distinguished civil servant with a long career and significant administrative post, not least working with yourself as former Chief Minister and as clerk up to this house for 8 years. The interpersonal skills he showed in the discharge of those roles required an ability to manage complex issues and people in difficult situations. We believe that he will bring those skills to bear in the sometimes emotionally and politically charged environment of his house in a way that will help us navigate parliamentary business in an efficient way. From this side of the house, we support his appointment and will work with him to try to assist in making his task easier. I also want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the contribution to the affairs of this house and indeed to public life of the outgoing Speaker of Oakport Canada. Mr. Canada has held Gibraltar's highest elected offices as Chief Minister and Leader of the Opposition. He was in government for 16 years and in this house as an elected member for 20. He also served as Mayor and lastly over the last 7 years as Speaker. He has given distinguished service to Gibraltar over 30 years. In many ways, the majority of those years, 1973 to 1983 in government, would have been very tough as a minister. In charge of the public administration of Gibraltar, with the frontier closed and without the unlocked economic potential of subsequent settlements. It is a testimony to the work of government in those years, within which I also loyally served, that we were able to weather the storm of that political peace. We thank our also for his service, not just to the House latterly in Speaker, but throughout his tenure holding the most important offices in the world.
I now put the question, which is that Mr. Melvin Farrell, BND, RDJT, be appointed a Speaker of the Parliament. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? None. Passed. Thank you. Thank you. As the Speaker, the Honourable Melvin Leslie Farrell.
Melvin Leslie Farrell, to swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. When I retired as clerk to this Parliament, I could never have imagined that I would return as its Speaker 5.5 years later. I wish to thank all honourable members for voting in favour of the motion. I am most grateful to the Chief Minister for placing his confidence in me and to the leader of the opposition for supporting my appointment. I also extend my grateful thanks to the Honourable Lady. I am both honoured and humbled. In my tenure in office, I will be independent, impartial, and fair-minded. Errors of judgment on my part, which may arise, will be acknowledged and rectified. I therefore ask for the forbearance of all honourable members in this regard. Parliament has in the past attracted public criticism in terms of how its members go about their legitimate parliamentary business. With this in mind, I would ask all honourable members to try to temper their language and to conduct their business in a more dignified and respectful manner. Such respect should also be extended to the speaker. This decision and ruling may not always find favour with honourable members, but must be accepted. As we continue to navigate through difficult and uncertain waters, I would respectfully suggest that all honourable members try to set aside, where possible, their political differences and to work together in this Parliament in a spirit of conviviality, in basis of Gibraltar and its people, the Gibraltar we so dearly love. Finally, I'd like to pay tribute to my predecessor and good friend, Adolfo Canessa, for his lifelong and dedicated service to the Gold and to Parliament. I also wish Adolfo and his wife Julie good health and happiness in the future. Thank you.
Of office of the Minister with Responsibility for Justice, the Honourable Samantha Jane Sacramento.
But in the office of Minister with Responsibility for Justice, I will respect the rule of law, defend the independence of the judiciary, and discharge my duty to ensure the provision of resources for the efficient and effective support of the court for which I am responsible. So help me God.
I say that the late arrival of the presidency was.
Mr. Speaker, may I first congratulate you on the appointment of the Speaker of the House, the most serious, most important appointment for the execution and also the reputation of the great parliamentary democracy. Congratulations.
Speaker, honourable members, I'm honoured and delighted to have the privilege of announcing the formal opening of the 14th Parliament. I give my warmest congratulations to all the honourable members of Parliament who were elected to represent the people of Gibraltar. I know you are all proved worthy of the heavy responsibility that has been entrusted to you. There is no greater duty than giving effect to the will of the people. I have no doubt that the manifest range of experience that you are able to bring to bear in exercising this duty will be decisive in ensuring Gibraltar's future success. I also have no doubt that both the Majesty's Government of Gibraltar and the Royal Opposition will, throughout the tenure of this Parliament, do everything within their collective resolution and capacity to continue to protect, progress, and promote the rich vital advantages of people and its environment. Gibraltar will continue to be the best it can be as it steps out ambitiously, boldly, and confidently into the world. I must also, just as the Chief Minister has done before, highlight the historic and remarkable contribution of the Father of the House, the Honourable Joe Fofana, who since the last summer opening has been appointed a Knight Commander of the Order of St. Michael and St. George. His incredible 47 years of membership of this Parliament and the former House of Assembly is a most commendable example to all other members and all aspiring future members of Parliament. I would like to take this opportunity to praise the unsung heroes of the election, those people whose tireless work behind the scenes ensured that the election ran legitimately, efficiently, and smoothly. In particular, the returning officer, Paul Matthews, and the other 300 civil servant election officials deserve our immense praise and admiration for their unstinting and short-footed efforts. So too do the Royal Gibraltar Police, the Gibraltar Post Office, and the ex-media, who all played an important part in making the election process such a credit to Gibraltar. As Governor and representative of Her Majesty the Queen, it's been an inspiring and proud distinction for me to witness at first hand at the Gibraltarian general election. The experience has underscored their understanding of just how much politics matters to the people of Gibraltar. A sure sign of what a free, trusted, inclusive, and accessible democracy in action that many aspire to that Gibraltar delivers. Manifestly sitting at the heart of every Gibraltarian's identity is a passionate commitment to and further for their profound and hard-earned right to decide Gibraltar's destiny peacefully through the ballot box. The nature and spirit of the political debate through the general election was also clear to all the candidates, despite the obviously strongly and keenly held views on all sides of the 5 week election discourse. The voters can be proud of the 71% voter turnout, proud of the general election, and proud of its inclusive, progressive, and resilient democracy. The bedrock of this democracy is Gibraltar's 2006 constitution, which came into force in 2007, following approval by referendum. This constitution anchors the modern, mature relationship which exists between Gibraltar and the United Kingdom. Underpinning this relationship is the United Kingdom's long-standing commitment to the people of Gibraltar that it will never enter into arrangements and that it's the people of Gibraltar will pass under the sovereignty of another state against their freely and democratically expressed wishes. The United States of the United Kingdom also remains committed that it will never enter a process of negotiation with Spain about the sovereignty of the rest without the Gibraltar government's consent. It is this constitutional framework that guarantees
the United Kingdom's experiences and the growth of British sovereignty, and the firm of diverse people's inalienable right to self-determination. The British has emerged from its latest general election round as imposing a national vision and parliamentary programme presented to the people of Gibraltar in the election manifesto of the political alliance made up of the Gibraltar Socialist Labour Party and the Gibraltar Liberal Party. I congratulate the GSLP Liberal Alliance on its re-election to govern for a third successive term. I know that the Governor of the United Kingdom and I look forward to working with Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar during this coming Parliament. In the past, Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar will continue to prioritise its environmental commitment to improve the Gibraltarian quality of life in the long term. The next 4 years will see not only the consolidation of current initiatives, but also a new innovative and achievable programme to better protect, enhance, and manage all aspects of our environment. We will make green Gibraltar a child-friendly city with the well-being of children at its centre. The government will also introduce a Sustainable Development for Future Generations Act and set up an independent environmental tribunal. The government will keep environmental legislation up to date with the European Union, even after Brexit, and will adopt European Union targets and standards as the minimum for Gibraltar. We will abide strictly by requirements of the Climate Changes Act, establish a Climate Action Fund, and encourage and increase the breadth and efficiency of recycling. The government also set up an Air Quality Commission to monitor and advise the government on all matters related to air quality. And as the government supporter is committed to strengthening and growing the economic sustainability of the jurisdiction, with the inception of a post-Brexit economic plan that has a 10-year global horizon. With a simplified business regulation and increased support for start-up businesses, as well as introduce a new gaming bill to Parliament within the first 6 months of 2020. Following the negotiation of the tax treaty with Spain and a federal taxation agreement with the United Kingdom, the government will work to build a tax treaty network with other countries, ensuring that these two are compliant with the base erosion of profit shifting principles of the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, a framework that Gibraltar has now joined. We will continue to modernise all aspects of the public sector, with improved success in planning, a review of senior public sector salaries and relativity, and greater provision of these services. We will also re-establish the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform. Moreover, a ministerial phase and a post for members of the Parliament will be tabled before this Parliament. The government will re-establish the Select Committee on the Constitution with the objective of examining the 2006 Constitution and determining whether and what future changes are necessary and appropriate. This review will be all the more relevant in the light of the departure of the United Kingdom and the growth of the European Union. There will be ample opportunity for the public to put forward their views on this fundamental matter. The government will hold a referendum on Thursday the 19th of March 2020 to determine whether the Abortion Act will come into effect. The government will fund both pro-life and pro-choice campaigns equally to ensure the referendum contest is fair and comprehensive. In healthcare, the government will shift focus to making the new and existing services more effective, particularly care provision in the community. We will introduce a health improvement strategy and a public health impact assessment to assist in developing policies and advising both associated public and private bodies. We also establish a new national drug strategy. To tackle the growing crisis in today's road network, the government will create a new centralized road traffic safety and planning office to centrally oversee and manage traffic planning and delivery matters in the community. We will introduce a mechanism for smart parking and is committed to making a minimum investment of £10 per capita in cycling. This will commit to data for a fit for purpose, sustainable and healthy future transport system. The runway tunnel remains on course to be opened by mid-2020, and the government will discuss with the Ministry of Defence keeping the runway open for pedestrians at least at peak times. In partnership with the Ministry of Defence, the government will introduce a road vehicle revenue bill to Parliament within the first 6 months of 2020, in step with establishing an armed forces government for Gibraltar following the appointment of a Minister for Veterans Affairs. We will continue to work with the Ministry of Defence to obtain a positive authority of status and conditions for Her Majesty's Armed Forces in the United Kingdom for road vehicle revenue. This will include seeking to ensure equitable housing, pension, and allowance provision. In continuing the groundbreaking work to tackle equality and civil rights issues, the government will introduce an equal opportunities policy for the public sector and provide guidance to the private sector. We will introduce legislation to outlaw any confidentiality clauses in harassment cases. Introduce strategy, parental, paternity leave, and will consult with all stakeholder groups on equalisation of pension age between men and women. The government will also appeal the legislation that enables registrars to refuse to marry same-sex couples. And as the government of Gibraltar will continue to work with our Majesty's Embassy in the United Kingdom, we seek to continue to engage in a constructive dialogue with the government of the Kingdom of Spain on all matters which benefit the people who live on both sides of the frontier. But we remain the keen determination of the American government of the United Kingdom and Gibraltar to make Gibraltar's relationship with Spain as mutually respectful and beneficial as it could and should be. Finally, I wish to note that Gibraltar's recent general election could hardly have taken place in a more dynamic and evolving political era. Looking forward together, the United Kingdom and Gibraltar face the challenge of building a new relationship with the European Union, while seizing the myriad opportunities affording a new place in enduring reverence in the wider world, especially with the Commonwealth of Nations. I cannot emphasize more strongly the United Kingdom government's passionate belief in these opportunities for global Britain and global Gibraltar. To make the most of these opportunities, we will need ambition, energy, resolve, and imagination, qualities which, time and again, the Great Parents have demonstrated to have in abundance. I can assure the people of Gibraltar that the United Kingdom will remain steadfast in support of Gibraltar and will defend Gibraltar's interests as we leave the European Union. Gibraltar is and will remain a beloved and esteemed part of the United Kingdom family. I have absolute confidence in Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar and this House will successfully protect, progress, and promote Gibraltar's vital advantages, its people, and its environment. Mr. Speaker, I conclude by offering my very best wishes to all members of this House, in government and in opposition, in overcoming the challenges and seizing the opportunities ahead. I have the great pleasure in declaring the first meeting of the new Parliament open. Thank you.
Honourable Deputy Speaker.
Your Excellency, it is always pleasing, satisfying, and a great comfort to hear you state the double lock commitment of the United Kingdom to the Gibraltarians' right to determine the sovereignty of Gibraltar and even any engagement on the negotiation. Thank you for once again making that explicit. It's worth repeating, not just for us, but also for any who may be listening or watching from beyond our shores. And as we established as soon as we were elected for the first time 8 years ago, the speech of residency has kindly delivered a moment ago is now the nature of a Queen's speech at Westminster. We're establishing now a statement drafted in the closest consultation with the Chief Minister of the day in a manner designed to reflect those parts of the manifesto of the party's return to government that will be the legislative agenda of the incoming administration in this parliament. But what is more important than what your speech here is today, Your Excellency, is actually what your speech here is not. Your speech here now is not in the nature of the speech of the representative of an administering power instructing members on what we are to do, what the defined domestic matters we are able to manage are, or the finances which we have available to run Gibraltar. And that is the first sign of the maturity of our relationship and our continued constitutional development. These are exactly the things we must reflect on in the work of the Constitutional Reform Select Committee that we will be re-establishing to consider how our foundational document should continue to develop our further political emancipation. So these are exactly the constitutional convention we should have established in the first part of the 21st century for the commencement of a parliamentary session in a territory which the United Kingdom itself tells the United Nations should be removed from the list of non-self-governing territories maintained by the Committee of 24 in New York. It is exactly what the representative of a constitutional monarchy should be doing in a democracy where the parliament is the instrument of the will of the people as determined in a free and fair general election. And as the result of that free and fair election produced a government led by the GSLP Liberals, it is today an honour for me to join the cast of only two other chief ministers in our history to address our chamber of elected members on three successive occasions. And since the first moment we were returned to government 8 years ago and I was elected as Chief Minister, we've ensured that the government we represent is styled as Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar, which is exactly what it is. And indeed, Your Excellency, given that we are Her Majesty's Government, it would be foolish not to record today, on this auspicious occasion in Gibraltar, our best wishes on his birthday to the heir to the throne of the United Kingdom and Gibraltar, the Prince of Wales, an undoubted friend of Gibraltar. A special friend, the heir apparent, amongst many friends that Gibraltar enjoys throughout the United Kingdom and beyond. And with the support of our friends throughout the world and the United Kingdom, we've been able to prosper and grow even in the face of some of the worst political aggression our nation and our people have suffered in our recent political history. As ever, we have not just survived, we have thrived. Because our cause is a just one, and our path a righteous one, derived from doing the right thing, acting entirely properly, and protecting our nation. That is what we have been seeing as the touchstone of the Gibraltarians through the ages. In particular, it has been the touchstone by which our forefathers faced up to the challenges of the age of the evacuation. The touchstone that guided the generation that selected the toughest of the choices presented to them in the ballot paper in the first referendum. The principles that guided the closed front of generation to stay the course, to do the right thing, and to hold their nerve for the benefit of those that came after them. They thought about the future. They thought about the next generation. They thought about us in instead of just thinking about themselves. And that is how their quest was won. That is how they built this city on rock and soil. We have much to learn from that attitude. And we will recognize in honest labor the genuine hard work and the sacrifice of past and present Jeffersonians to be traduced or mischaracterized or misrepresented. We will not allow our people to be libeled or defamed by those whose politics today are derived from the politics of those who inflicted so much pain in the past on people on both sides of the frontier. Because it is clear that even if we celebrate 100 years since the end of the First World War, 75 years next year since victory in Europe, and 30 years since the fall of the Berlin Wall, that the hard right is alive and kicking in Europe. And we will work in every available forum to ensure that we take on anyone who seeks to use innuendo or lies to misrepresent our people, our journey, and our reality. Because we're a government that was elected to deliver social justice, and we have. And that is means the national social justice must be left as a crusade for international justice for our people. And we will not hesitate to seek out such justice for our nation in every forum within our grasp. Because it is a truth etched in the arches of time by Dr. Martin Luther King that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And the memory of the people of Gibraltar is long. Our stamina is inexhaustible, and our hope unanswerable. And so I say to all who would slander or smear our people, our motives, or our identity, you stand in the way of the truth and legitimacy of the people of Gibraltar at your peril. We are fierce friends to those who want to work with us, but we will be fearless foes for those who seek to denigrate us. So we will never give up our rights to our land. We will not let down our ancestors who are buried here in our sacred ground. We will not surrender the land of our children and our children's children. We will not be cowed by the cheap and empty rhetoric of insults. And if you stand in our way, history will sweep you away like any other one of the many hurdles we have already spent. A footnote to the history of our common success as a people. And our commitment to social justice, Your Excellency, has been felt not just with our performance in the international dimension by our people for emancipation. It has been felt also in positive progress for many at a national level. This is an area on which we have led from the front on equality in every respect. Whether on the civil partnership for all sexual orientations, including heterosexuals, or on equal marriage, or on matters of nationality, which also goes to the equality agenda. On each one, we are the ones who have unblocked generations of social intangibles. And we will continue to do so. Not by being over-radical in an attempt to grab a headline, but by being conscientious, by bringing people and society with us, and by acting properly and in keeping with people's modern rights. I emphasize, Your Excellency, that we have unblocked applications for British nationality which have been allowed to fester since the early 1980s. We have made huge progress, in particular, in relation to our Moroccan and Indian communities, and we are now looking only at small numbers of pending applications and nationalities. Because the point is that it is not just about matters relating to elimination of discrimination in respect of gender and sexual orientation. Equality is about social justice as much as fair wages, a fair housing policy, and fair taxation is about social justice. And in each of these areas, our arguments and our progress for government have been preferred now for the third successive time to those whose arguments have been more negative and constructive. Because our people do not think politics or elections should be uninspiring arguments about balances. Our people have shown repeatedly that they are not going to follow successive iterations of our opponent's version of progress. Here, our people will not have their electoral choices tainted by repeated unimaginative arguments about stretched finances, impending bankruptcy, or capacity, when the reality around them tells our people a palpably different truth. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, we will soon be tabling, in fact, I think we've already received it, a new facility agreement entered into with NatWest, for £75 million to replace the borrowings in place for £100 million with Barclays Bank that matured in October, a demonstration of our continued work to secure always better borrowing terms for our community than those we inherited from the former administration that most honourable members of the government. All of this will be dealt with in detail at the first meeting of the Parliament, which today I can tell the House I intend to convene for December. It is for three successive general election wins. On three successive occasions, our people have preferred our vision for the future of our nation and our prudent management of the public finances. Our views, and those of the former administration, on the corporate financing and capital projects have prevailed and have been preferred repeatedly, despite being the linchpin of the arguments against them. Three times, people have rejected the personalised attacks that some have deployed masquerading as a legitimate opposition. Three times, the scaremongering hasn't worked on debt, the public finances generally, or even, dare I remind the House, Kevin Booth. Because an election is a moment of political catharsis, where the general body of electors clears itself of the unwanted and wins in the new. Those who have lived by the sword of unwarranted allegations have fallen by the sword of the electorate's projection. Recently, I will not be foolish enough to give my opponents advice on what they should do to defeat us, but it should certainly be clear to them that the tactics used to date have not advanced their cause. Our commitment to the publication of government company accounts is unprecedented and will deliver a transparency unheard of in our democracy. Our publication of statistics online is also without precedent. The public have access now to more than ever before. It still behoves those who publish less data to complain that we do not publish enough data. We will nonetheless be reaching out to work with opposition colleagues in this parliament. But it is clear that in doing so, we will be seeking their views, their involvement, and their assistance where appropriate in the context of none of the grouping property rights representing more than a quarter of the electorate. And so, as we will consider humility our watchword as we govern for all our people, it will be important that the opposition should meet our humility with a similar people. So, if this is a government which is clearly elected by more than double the votes of our nearest government rivals, this is the time for governments to act and deliver, and we will. Our opponents have to hold us to account, and I ask them to do so with energy and enthusiasm, but they also have to construct an alternative vision for our people. That is an essential ingredient in our democracy. It's as essential as criticism. Holding to account is an incredible and legitimate political license to criticize without constructing an alternative. For the sake of our nation's democracy, I hope that they will. The people of Gibraltar want to have chosen a strong and positive vision of where Gibraltar is heading. They want to know where the government is going to take our nation. They do not want a dissertation on the proper accounting treatment of an asset, a liability, or a discretion. They know that our experts are expert in dealing with those issues. Because that is not a vision for our future and for our nation. It's a myopic presentation of detail that raises no interest in those who want to secure our prosperity and who want to see a socially just agenda dominate the political life of our nation. And in order to continue our commitment to delivering social justice and equality, the government has republished the bills that fell off the agenda at the time of dissolution so that we can continue where we left off. We are committed to the wide legislative agenda we have already kindly set out, highlighting our commitment. Because our creed is that we believe in the men and women of the world. That is why we are committed to dealing with the gender pay gap, with abortion, and with any grassroots issues that may be raised with us. If the speaker of any member of the public points us to a glass ceiling affecting any sector or any group, our calling is to center through it with legislation from the council to next. We believe in our young people. We've already proposed voting at the age of 16, and we'll be putting this issue on the agenda for parliamentary reform and in respect of coming referendum and abortion. We believe in the LGBTQ agenda, and every single member of this House must too. And we must all evangelize those equality issues. We must all evangelize real equality. And if anyone here is going to evangelize for any other agenda, whether traditional or non-secular agenda, that retains discrimination in our laws, then let them be honest and faithful. But we will have to take a con on these issues.
they want to take on me and my colleagues on these issues, because this is our creed, this is who we are, and this is who we advocate for. And in doing so, Mr. Speaker, we've advocated for minorities in our community, as we've advocated for all of us, the civilians, in the process of our departure from the European Union with the United Kingdom. Instead, from the closest, indeed in the closest working relationship with colleagues in His Majesty's Government of the United Kingdom, we have advanced greatly in preparation for all permutations of our departure or non-departure from the European Union. Hard Brexit, soft Brexit, no Brexit, we are ready for all of them, including a potential new referendum. And in the sense of Brexit, it is clear that the lifetime of this last Parliament is dominated by the infamous deal. At the last ceremonial opening, I spoke about the commitment of the then Prime Minister, David Cameron, to include Gibraltar in the franchise of the referendum to come. Since then, with the Deputy Chief Minister, all other ministers, the Attorney General and the Financial Secretary, we have been immersed in every aspect of our potential departure and future relationship with the EU. It has literally been an assignment for every waiting moment. And our reward for that hard work and that commitment has not just been our return to government and the confidence of our people, although it has undoubtedly been that also. Our greatest reward has been to see our economy continue to grow and our nation continue to prosper when so many considered that Brexit, or worse, the uncertainty that it created, should have led to our economic performance suffering considerably. In fact, the opposite happened. Our preparation at home, our collaboration with the United Kingdom, our relentless endeavour, that is what has delivered a dividend of enviable economic growth. It has enabled us to deliver an enviable agreement for continued access to the United Kingdom and services after we leave the European Union. This has been described in the notes to the Queen's speech in Westminster last month as being an arrangement that is unique to Gibraltar amongst the only territories in Crown Dependency. A huge achievement delivered by working hand in glove with UK colleagues. This has enabled us to deliver a double taxation agreement between us and the United Kingdom, a prize that has eluded us for years. And our hard work has done more. It has enabled us to deliver an international tax agreement with Spain which clarifies the application of the existing laws of each of our jurisdictions to citizens with cross-border interests. A treaty that three euphemistic agreements contains no concessions on sovereignty to Spain. So Joe Bassano's analysis on the politics of the treaty is clear. So Peter Cabana's analysis on the law of the treaty is clear. And my own view on the politics and law of the treaty, informed by the advice of both the former, is well known to the House. This treaty and the Memorandum of Understanding and the Protocol to the EU Withdrawal Agreement have been negotiated bilaterally between the UK, Spain and Gibraltar, and bilaterally between Spain and Gibraltar. I cannot emphasize the latter enough. A truly remarkable achievement also. And this variable geometry of thought, also including discussing the times of the European Commission, is what has resulted in our being included in the withdrawal agreement between the UK and the EU in the event that Brexit were to occur with the deal. By any measure of urgency, this is undoubtedly a success to be shared by UK British and UK Gibraltar and Gibraltar British diplomacy and politics. A success that sets it up for many more years of growth, prosperity and success, based on the creation of a superhighway for business between Gibraltar and the United Kingdom and to the Commonwealth beyond. A new key track for businesses to run on the tram lines established by the common law and the rule of law, which are the core principles we share with the UK and the Commonwealth. And for this, the DCO between us and the UK will be the superconductor that drives our businesses safely, openly and transparently to new destinations. Some of these new destinations will undoubtedly be in the old empire. And they are now within a moment's reach, literally at light speed, as we ride the modern fiber conduit that stretch around the world and land and reach out from this block of ours around the globe. And some of our key destinations now will be the places from which we have received people who are today an integral part of our multicultural society. We continue to believe that we are presented with great opportunities to pursue the strong roots of those of our fellow Gibraltarians whose ethnic origin enables them to easily navigate other cultures. We have great opportunities to pursue now in Morocco, where we have already augmented our activities and will do even more in coming months and years. And in India,
where so many of our great entrepreneurs come from, not least the energetic new member of the government benches, Minister Xavier Mani. And as we continue our work to build bridges around the world, and I think government of Gibraltar will always reach out a hand of friendship and cooperation to the government of the Kingdom of Spain also. As I stated at the last ceremonialism, we will continue to seek to establish non-sovereignty dialogue with the government of Spain on matters of mutual interest, and which will improve the lives of people in both sides of the conflict. That need not change because we will not be in the European Union, and will in fact probably be more important for our citizens if we are not. But to be meaningful and successful, such dialogue must be based on the principle of mutual respect, something which we believe was preserved under the mechanisms of the trilateral forum for dialogue, and which was reinforced by the variable geometry that underpinned our negotiations in respect of the EU nuclear agreement. And lastly, as we face our third consecutive mandate, we will not fall into the trap of being isolated in an ivory tower or a gilded cage in office. We will not even allow the unleashed demons of Brexit to isolate us as it necessarily did in the lifetime of the last parliament. We will work even harder than in our first return to reach out to our people. We will work harder now, not less so, to nurture and maintain the trust and confidence of our people. That is why I was so pleased yesterday, Your Excellency, to spend the morning meeting members of the public, as I've done since I was elected, but with the twist that yesterday I held those meetings at the Plato Youth Club at Canterbury. I'll be holding further such meetings in other areas around the Gibraltar, as well as continuing to meet members of the public at membership present day. Additionally, today I can also announce that the Cabinet will meet outside the Commonwealth Place once a month in locations around Gibraltar to enable us to also be available as a whole government to members of the public. I'll be making a more detailed announcement on the timings and locations for these meetings in coming months. And as those meetings will roll into years and this Parliament reaches maturity, I've been very clear on the election trail that nothing will ever be the same in Gibraltar. We are already planning to deliver our manifesto commitments, which we see as our obligation to the public. We're planning timelines and finances to deliver in the 48-month timescale. But if we judge our ability to deliver and change our nation based on our last 96 months in government, there is every good reason to be confident that we will deliver that much heralded Green Gibraltar in the time available. So I want to be clear today, yes, that there will be radical change delivered by the government I lead in coming months. On climate change, on sustainability, on the protection of our natural environment, we are all out of time. Soundbites sound hollow to those of us who want to deliver real change. But Green Gibraltar is a memory that we cannot make without breaking in. And greater as we will, for the greater and more important objective that is at stake. So much has changed already. So much more will change in coming months. In 4 years, we will live in a healthier, cleaner, and more prosperous Gibraltar. In a Gibraltar where the provision of healthcare services will be linked to the prevention of ill health, by the prevention of pollution, by the promotion of exercise, through walking and cycling. Already yesterday, we have seen such examples starting to roll out. A new social model that will succeed only when we, the citizens, understand that we need to enter into a new social contract with each other and with our institutions of government. And from this point, we will drive that grand new bargain, that green new bargain between us all. That is why, in 4 years' time, nothing will be the same. Because things cannot stay the same. Because everything has to be better. Our services have to be more efficient. Our lifestyles have to be more sustainable. Our personal lives have to be less selfish and our objectives more communal. That is why the age of entitlement is past. That is why the age of sustainability and responsibility is now ushered in and must be embraced by all across the partisan divide. Indeed, let me say I believe that we are now at a stage in our development as a people when we all have to ask ourselves a variation of the JFK question. How can each of us contribute more to the growth of the nation and not how can the nation be milked, squeezed, or abused further for our personal gain? Indeed, in coming months, I believe all our people will understand that it will be politically unacceptable to pursue the court of those who want to jump a queue, obtain an unfair advantage, or get something for nothing. It is also a time for our people to genuinely value what we have. The abundance we enjoy must be understood in the context of the Europe and the world in which we live today, and not in the splendid isolation of what more everyone would like. And as we start that work as a parliament, and as an executive of your I want to welcome the new honourable member of the House, Mr. Dalinani, and the returning members of the House. The faces on the opposite benches are all returning, none are new, although some return after a longer interval than others. The leader of the opposition is new to the parliament, although he was a member of its forerunner, the House of Assembly. Knowing all the characters as I do, I believe that we can deliver a starkly more convivial atmosphere in coming months and years. I am sure we would all welcome a less barbed atmosphere, however robust our exchanges on these issues might rightly be. The first test of our ability to work together, even on issues on which we may hold different views, will come quickly as we seek to agree with the opposition the question to be put in the abortion referendum, which will be held on the 19th of March. Yes. We have already passed the law that permits abortion in 7 to 5 circumstances. The question will be about the commencement of an act that we have already passed. In that respect, I also look forward to working towards the more effective functioning of the Gibraltar Consultative Council that can bring a new cross-party approach to resolving challenges facing our nation. And I also lament that one former member has chosen not to return to this parliament, the Honourable Neil Costa, who was a magnificent minister and parliamentarian for the past 8 years. He will be in parliamentary terms much missed, although he continues to be a supportive part of our political extended family. Your Excellency, to do its work effectively, this parliament must meet often. We establish when others refuse to, that there should be monthly meetings for questions, with the Chief Minister facing questions where possible the third Thursday of each month. We maintain that rhythm until the last 18 months due to the weight of the work on Brexit negotiations. We intend now to revert to that rhythm that we had established starting in December. I very much look forward to that work with colleagues across the floor of the House. Your Excellency, this will be your first and last speech on the ceremonial opening. It is my third and likely my last speech on such an occasion also, so long as this Parliament is able to run for 48 months. As another person, my duties to my family and to my country and to my party in that order. I am clear that my family, my country and my party have given me everything that I have and have made me everything that I am. I will work as hard as I am able to not to let any of those down. The first I have advised those are my family, my children and my wife. I will not embarrass any of us further by straying into the election as I did in the morning of the election. But that will be the key consideration for me in making personal political decisions in coming years. A lot will, however, also depend on how the Brexit negotiations might be moved. But politics at the top in the age of the 24/7 social media is a worthwhile but unforgiving endeavour. It is right to mark at least a national endpoint in one's journey. I have done so already, and I will work to be able to depart this post at the end of the lifetime of the Parliament. Finally, Your Excellency, since the last ceremonial opening, we have lost colleagues along the way. One was a member of this House, Pankaja Prayas, who I want to mention today. I know that he was very highly regarded by members in both houses. Mr. Speaker, today, the 13th of November, is Children's Day in India. What a fitting day to commence the lifetime of a Gibraltar Parliament that boasts its first elected member and minister of Indian descent, but is made up of an executive committed to delivering a child-friendly city. Your Excellency, I commend the opening of this Parliament to the House and trust that our work will now start in earnest in a spirit of parliamentary solidarity and conviviality.
The Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the rest of the say. First of all, Mr. Speaker, I want to congratulate you on your appointment. You are already familiar with the workings of this House from another chair, as a former clerk for 8 years. You have, as I said during my remarks from the motion, deep experience of the inner workings of government at very senior levels, and we look forward to working with you in that new role. I understand your Excellency is nearing the end of your tenure as government.
On behalf of the opposition, I want to wish you and your family all the best for the future in whatever challenges you move on to. You have proved a good friend of the voter and understood our aspirations, which is the best compliment that one can give a governor of this state. I also want to acknowledge with thanks the appreciation of those on this side of the House, to all civil servants who made the election a seamless affair, not least to the clerk of the House and the returning officer. And equally, I want to thank all our candidates, especially those who were not elected this time, and of course our friend and colleague, Trevor Hammond, who put in endless hours of work, especially in the environment, and will be sorely missed in this house. Of this fire. It is good to be back in the House. The last time I was here was 16 years ago on the opposite benches next to Sir Peter Caruana. It has not been an easy return. There have been details, highs and lows along the way, that I was hopeful of making a renewed contribution, and I am grateful to two or three members for having put their trust in me in 2017, and the electorate at large for having returned me to power. My father would have been 83 today. He would have enjoyed seeing me in this position. He probably would have enjoyed me more on the other side of the house. But there you go. The Gibraltarians of my parents' generation were the returning evacuees who struggled in the post-war decades and the years of frontier closure. They laid the foundation stones of modern Gibraltar. They agitated for better working conditions, for equality of treatment, and against colonialism and discriminatory practices. They fought for self-government. I cannot claim that my parents played any leading role in any of those events. The opposite is true. They did not come from leading or wealthy families. They were not well placed. My father left school at 15. My mother was a homemaker. They were ordinary working class witnesses to all those events. But what they did do is to give me a clear sense of value, a commitment to hard work, a sense of fairness, a belief in meritocracy, a sense of rebellion against discrimination, colonialism, and unfairness, and an understanding of what it means to have very little. I saw and continue to see life from the perspective of working class families. Those roots and that grounding influences everything I do in politics, what I have done, and where the GOP will stand in the political spectrum while I am its leader. I'm indebted to the hard work of all my predecessors to make the GSP what it is today. Sir Peter Caruana was, of course, the towering figure among GSP ranks for so many years, and I worked closely with him, in particular during my stint as president. More recently, I'm especially grateful to my colleague Daniel Keaton for his sterling work as opposition leader, for his resilience and commitment to the GSP, and his personal support of me since I became leader in 2017. He has been, and continues to be, a constant source of sensible advice and guidance. I also want to acknowledge the work of all GSP MPs in the last House and single out the contribution of Elliot Phillips, who took the role of parliamentary leader loyally in unprecedented circumstances when he did not have the liberty to direct the entire orchestra. To a very large extent, and while I have been GSP leader for the last 2 years, I see my main role as starting now. As it is only now that I am on equal footing with everyone else. It is only now that I am in this House and can properly voice my views and be heard with the opportunity this role now gives me. Before now, it was a bit like driving a car from the back seat. My real work starts now. And as I take the baton of this role and I look across the House, I'm reminded that I started in politics all those years ago, in 1991, with Fagin, and David, among others. We were then young people concerned about our future. That political generation matured and emerged. We are on opposite sides of the House. We may disagree on many issues, but I am also sure that there are plenty of issues that unite us on which we can work together for the common interest of all our people. A big shadow was cast over the last election we just celebrated, the dark shadow of Brexit uncertainty, which was played by the incumbent government for all its worth during the campaign. Even though when we went round the estate or district, people wanted to talk about their housing concerns, employment, or health issues, it was also clear that for many people, uncertainty preyed on their minds. This contributed to the results, and indeed the way the campaign turned out. There are lessons for all of us in this election. We entirely respect the result of the election. The District Liberals were re-elected. But they were re-elected without the enthusiasm that had accompanied some of their previous wins. This was a muted win, which could scarcely conceal the underlying disenchantment in many quarters of their style of government, their policies, and their mistakes. It is a lesson, too, for us in opposition. Many people wanted change. Despite the government playing the Brexit fear card to its fullest extent, 46% of people voted for opposition parties. But of course, a split in opposition vote only favoured the incumbent. So it is for us to persuade the many people who already want change and the others who will come round to that view during the next 4 years to hold fast and not flip their vote if they want change to be delivered. And the opposition entry, it is our collective responsibility to all those people who want it change to ensure that we present a solid alternative at the next election. To do that, we must capture the imagination once again and reflect on how we do opposition politics. The GOP will do that in coming years with a talented and diverse team of individuals inside and outside of this parliament. I have been on all sides of election results in the past, on winning and losing points. And like in general life, it is often how you behave and what you draw from a defeat that marks you as a person and helps you transition as a party. So it is important to learn lessons in victory and in defeat. But in doing so, it is important to resist the temptation of trusting everything we stand for that we did during the campaign. We fought a positive and constructive campaign. I am not going to change the style of my politics because I believe in it. And I believe people want a different way of doing things. Still, negative politics or hollow populism are not for me, because they accelerate a race to the bottom via extreme, thoughtless, or unprincipled positions. They also distract from what really needs to be done. I believe people want real solutions to their real problems, so we will concentrate on preventing those. I want to restore political hope to people. That belief in a positive way of doing politics should not be confused with a lack of robustness. We will be robust when we need to be. We will call out mistakes, and where we fundamentally disagree with the government, we will say so. We will not step from that role. I lay a marker here and now that we will relentlessly pursue the government on issues of fairness and transparency and wastage of public funds. They should not expect that we will tolerate silently their excesses or failures to give answers or accounts to people. If they fail on housing, or jobs, or their health service, they are not going to get a free ride from the GST that I lead, and they will not get a free ride from me. Conservative minister who had promised a new dawn and way of doing things in 2011 did not be surprised when I told him that that was a false dawn for some people. And that's not me making a politically partisan point, however it sounds, because so much is clear from the many conversations we had during this long campaign, from Big Five to the upper town, we've heard many stories of disappointment, rejection, and dismay. So if a re-elected government truly wish to deliver a better way for all those people, they will need to try much harder to govern for everyone, fairly and equally. The GSP is a party with clear values and a long track record. On the 14th of December this year, we celebrate our 30th anniversary. It is inevitable that when a party like ours that has a long-standing government goes into opposition, it goes into a period of transition. It happened to the GSP, and it has inevitably happened to us. But if there's one big lesson that I have learned from the father of the house who gave the final over so many years, it is that in politics, it is important to have fun. So we must take the course and come back stronger, and we will. We will reconnect with people and re-energize. We have done it before. When the GSP obtained 20% of the vote in 1992, which would have served no one if Peter Gahuana had just given up. We persevered and came back stronger to win 4 years later. In that task, opposition, unity, and strength of purpose is crucial. I make it clear that I am absolutely determined to deliver that strong alternative, and no one should doubt the single-minded, unified sense of purpose of this year's team to ensure we emerge much stronger by the next election. We will and do have strength. In offering a clear and strong alternative to government over the next 4 years, I also want to set out the principles that will influence our vote. We will offer a positive vision for the Gibraltar that we treasure. We will work with government if they properly include us on issues of public interest and where we have common ground. We will not hide from voicing our disagreements loudly where we think it is important to do so. Our politics will reflect the core values of the GSP modernized for our times. It will be a mainstream, centrist, progressive vision of social democracy, protecting civil rights, fostering equality, enhancing conditions for working people, economically liberal, and ensuring fairness, transparency, opportunity, and value for money. We will continue the work of regenerating the party further. We will seek to infuse young people with our new core message and represent all sectors of our society as we have always sought to do. We will get out into the community as we have been doing already, but with effort redoubled. We will cover every state or district or representative association in our outreach program. We will be there for everyone. We will build on what was an extremely forward-looking and progressive manifesto for the last election, full of good ideas on quality of life, better services, the environment, housing, workers' rights, skills, or mental health. The Chief Minister already said in his speech on election morning that he may pick some of the best ideas from all manifestos. We are glad he will do that, in acknowledgement that the government do not have a monopoly on good ideas for the public interest. We will work hard for the good of our people. We will represent all our people and not just the people who voted for us. We will hold ministers to account and scrutinize government positions. We will be critical and constructive in equal measure. Gibraltar will not find us wanting in our commitment. We will be bold in setting out our vision for the future. The talented team that we have in Parliament will be the immediate public face of the GSP opposition, but we will combine that with the new energy and enthusiasm of other younger people who will play a public role in politics in the future. I believe our parliamentary team has the strength and ability which will mark it as a clear alternative to government. While Brexit casts a shadow over the election, I do not minimise its importance to our future. It is crucial to navigate the consequences of Brexit successfully. The die is not yet cast as to whether we leave the EU with or without a deal. I said during the campaign that we consider that the government left an opportunity to negotiate a better set of country arrangements with the EU. Even so, and despite our misgivings, we prefer those sufficient MOU to no deal. If we leave with no deal, now or in the future, the government's continuous protestations that they are Brexit ready will be put to the test. We have not been involved in those preparations to any meaningful extent. If there are figures in preparation, the government can expect us to sign a bright light on these, as it would be our duty to do so. When we leave with or without a transitional deal, the next question will be whether and if so, what kind of permanent deal with the EU could be struck by the UK and indeed Gibraltar to replace existing arrangements. Here, we are on sensitive ground, not least because of the possibility, indeed some say likelihood, that Spain may exercise its pressure over our inclusion in the permanent arrangement. Again, we will monitor that emerging scenario carefully. We believe a good permanent agreement can be entered into with the EU. We are happy to work with the government if they seek our help on navigating Brexit. This is not a time for political pride or arrogance. This is a challenge of seminal importance to Gibraltar and a time for political leaders to show their ability to work together in the national interest as necessary. The GSPR League will be strong on sovereignty and on the recognition of our international rights as a people. So I also say to the Chief Minister and express our willingness to attend the United Nations with him as part of a joint Gibraltar delegation. Again, this is a matter for him, but I make clear that we are willing to show a common front at international fora where Gibraltar's interests are being discussed. Like was the case in the 1960s, we are happy to face these international issues together. We may deeply disagree with the government on domestic issues, but it is safe to say we should be able to share a common view on the fundamental aspirations of our people. I have made no secret of the fact that I believe passionately in parliamentary reform. This will improve democratic accountability, the quality of decision speech, and the pool of talent of people influencing those decisions. We will therefore be pressing the government on this agenda so that deep reforms are put in place to improve our democratic system. We are now one of the few places in the democratic world that is hampered by such a rudimentary system. We need to breathe life into our parliamentary system by radical reform and, indeed, perhaps also electoral reform. In overall terms, our approach in opposition will be energetic, measured, positive, constructive, but yet also robust and critical where necessary. We also demand the vigour of tough opposition, and we will deliver that in fulfilment of our constitutional duty and the people that we serve. We will be the voice of the people in opposition.